From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of October, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And then later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, a GAO report is calling for an end to the ethanol industry's blender tax credit. Rabobank is expecting mothballed ethanol plants to come back online, increasing demand for corn. And trade groups are suggesting the U.S. should press ahead with a WTO complaint against the EU ban on poultry imports. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby December wheat at $4.42¾, a penny and a half higher. The March at $4.62¼ for the soft red, up 1½, and May at $4.74½, a penny higher. In Kansas City, December hard red at $4.61¾ finished the wheat futures 2¼ cents higher. Back in Chicago, an 8 cent gain for the December corn contract. 341½, the final trade for the harvest month, once again, 8 cents higher. March contract at 354¼ in the corn, up 7¾. The May at 363¼, up 7¾. And July at 371, up 7¼. September futures at 379½ for the corn, 7¼ cents higher. From the soy complex, November beans finished unchanged, a final price at 800, or rather 885 for the day. The January at 890¾, down a penny and a quarter on the afternoon. The March at 890¾, down 4½ cents. And the May contract at 890½, down 3. July soybeans, 894¼, down 1¾. August futures, 890, down 2 cents. October bean meal, 275.50, up 3.50. October oil at 33.53, down 20 cents. October live cattle, 82.67½, down 27½. October feeders at 93.35, down 20. And the October lean hogs at $49 and a nickel, down 20 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, nearby November contract, $70.41. The final trade at 46 cents higher per barrel. Ethanol at $1.89¼, up 1⅛ cents. Natural gas at $4.98¾, 26½ cents higher. The RBOB at $1.75¼, that's up a penny and 3 cents. The RBOB gasoline is what your unleaded gasoline is traded off of. And heating oil, that's diesel fuel, $1.79¼, down 0.4 cents. Propane futures at 99 cents even, 0.3 cents higher. And the gold futures today at $1,016.70, up $13.50 on a settlement price. The Dow at 9,619, just about 132 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 76.64, that's down 0.36. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 256.23 is up 3.36 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. Tonight in northern and western Illinois should become cloudy, some showers arriving after midnight. Elsewhere in Illinois and western Indiana, increasing cloudiness. In eastern Indiana, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 43 in northwestern, or rather northeastern Indiana, to 55 in southwestern Illinois, that for this evening. Tomorrow, cloudy, periods of rain, scattered thunderstorms. Highs will range from 58 in northwestern Illinois to 72 in the far south. The extended forecast says dry weather will prevail on Wednesday, with near to slightly cooler than average temperatures. Rain will return on Thursday and continue into Friday. The heaviest rainfall expected in the southern half of the two states, with 1 to 3 inches possible. Unseasonably cool weather will arrive for the weekend and early next week. High temps will only be in the 40s in the north and central sections and 50s in the south. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
It's a Monday afternoon and time to check the agricultural futures markets. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, is on the line with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Hey, tell me just a little bit about what you saw in the marketplace today in Chicago. A nice little uptrend in the corn market for the day.
Oh, boy, what an emotional roller coaster. This is probably one of the most dynamic days we've seen in some time, news-wise. Basically, we started out in the overnight trade with a little lower tone, concerns that at the end of the weekend here we're going to see a larger production estimate. Even though we had a little cold weather in the forecast, that is, there's a big crop out there, sort of had everybody kind of negative starting out. Then, too, news that one of the government accounting offices was looking at the 45-cent ethanol subsidy as a costly and unnecessary event that's taking place here, that the mandate alone should take care of that and is a waste of taxpayers' dollars, was construed as negative. And so we started out with a lower opening call, but no more we opened lower, the market found some sellers caught short and had to buy the way out of it. And as the day went on, the bullish news came to the trough here in the market. This literally exploded to the upside in the corn futures on some fundamental news that got the trade excited here. And that fundamental news was basically confirmation that we're going to see some colder temperatures as we go into this weekend. And here some forecasters projecting a freeze event clear down to Interstate I-70, which would take care of a good portion of the upper Midwest. Ideas are that up to 25% of the corn crops vulnerable, and I've seen as much as 3 billion bushels could be affected by it. So that caught the market on fire. Then offset the ethanol bearish news, there's bullish ethanol news that there were as much as 2 cargoes of ethanol set to go to South America. South America has been the big user of ethanol and big producer of ethanol, but with record high sugar prices and wet weather in the southern hemisphere and unable to get their sugar crop out, U.S. ethanol has become an attractive feature in the world market, Todd.
Is there a reason that the fundamental news for the cold didn't bother to push the soybeans really higher? They managed only to finish the November unchanged, and I'm wondering whether it's just that that crop is far enough along and mostly mature that traders aren't nearly as worried about it as they are the corn, or if there's something else afoot there.
I think you pretty well hit it right on the nose there, Todd. You know, we'll see what the state breakdowns say this afternoon on maturity and so forth. But when you look at the beans, for the most part, there's still some green beans out there, but it depends how far south this frost freeze materializes. But corn-wise, there is still corn still in the milk dough stage, clear up into the northern growing region. So as a whole, the trade's a little bit more for a change, a little bit more concerned about the corn being frost or froze than the beans at the present time.
Well, growing degrees did not pile up, and
oh man,
and it appears that the corn crop may pay the price. We'll find out as we get through the week, this week and into Sunday. Of course, the further out we are on the forecast, the more likely I suppose it is to change. But it is the month of October, and that first frost date does come pretty quickly here, even in the central part of Illinois. And well, I suppose the corn market will have to wait it out and see. Do you think there are more up days left in the marketplace this week before we get to Sunday?
Well, you know, the old trader's adage will be turn around on a contrary Tuesday. So
right.
Wayne Nelson is going to have to deal with probably a lower market tomorrow night, and we'll see how he handles that. Hopefully he can turn it back up. But we got to look at the technical picture. Corn did get up to some resistance there. You know, a couple of days ago, a lot of producers said, boy, if we ever get back to 350, I'd be a seller. Well, today's high is 350, and I don't know if a whole lot got sold, but we kind of view that 350, today's high, as a benchmark to try to get above. And on the beans, probably need to use today's highs as a benchmark to try to get a high. But I think, you know, the bull and the bear are both going to be right here over the near term. I think we're going to have some ups and we're going to have some downs. The challenge is to try and get in rhythm with it and take advantage of that.
Yeah, you will. You said 350 is the spot to try to get above, but I didn't hear you say it was a spot to try to make a sale at. Is that right?
Well, I would be a seller up there. You know, we're going to be in a situation where there's still going to be plenty of grain for sale.
Right.
When you visit with elevators, not a whole lot's been sold yet, so I would use some strength in here to try to get some sold. If you still have some old corn around, I've heard as much as 20-25 cent premium in some areas, try to blend it off on this poor quality new crop coming in. So there's some opportunities out there, but I think as a producer, we like kind of getting caught up on strength and transferring that ownership to paper. That way you can manage some of those dollars to help pay bills.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Livestock market continues to grind a little lower in here. We still remain positive longer term. We're just seeing heavier carcass weights come in. We've still got plenty of meat in the freezer. But on the other side of the equation, as we continue to see some liquidation take place, the cold storage report and the supply-demand balance sheet on this livestock sector is going to turn here as we go into 2010.
A little bit higher price and better. Well, a return to profits, I suppose, for them, but not much in the way for the profits, I would think.
Yeah, it's been tough going. If you're one that likes to stock the freezer, I'd take advantage of some of these bacon sales. You can get some bacon in the store fairly cheap. That was back when the August contract was being traded down in this 40-50 cent area. As we go in this winter, that bacon's going to go up, so I'd fill up that freezer tight.
All right, thanks much.
Very good.
That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
You know, on Friday we talked a great deal about the number of hours that a soybean could be harvested. And over the weekend, I thought maybe that I was working with my son to cut some grass, and I thought maybe this would be a good way to explain it to non-ag audiences so that if they've got a yard and they try to go out, we went out Sunday, beautiful day, at noon. He was cutting somebody else's grass. He called me and said, "Dad, this thing's just chugging along, and it's rolling up, and I can't get this done. The engine's not working right." So I went down, listened to it, and of course it was just that it was so wet that it couldn't really, that little engine couldn't get through that grass at the time. It was too wet. So we went back 4 hours later at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I still had to set that mower a little bit higher in order to get the grass cut. And that's pretty much what the soybean farmer is dealing with on his soybeans. It's a little different for corn, but I thought I might explain that way to the non-ag audience just about how the types of problems that a producer has with harvesting a crop this late in the season. The dew just doesn't get off the crop, and they can't get it through the combine. We'll talk more about that, I know. As the weeks pass, it will be a very long, hard, and arduous harvest season for those farmers. Be sure you watch for them out there on the roads, on the back roads of Illinois, Indiana, and all the Midwest. They'll be there early in the morning and late in the evening, probably, and they need to keep you to keep an eye out for them, so that they're safe. I know they'll be watching for you. In just a moment, Dave Dickey will be here. He'll have all the agricultural news for the afternoon. And then after that, we'll talk with Daryl Good. And we'll get an update of the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons.
In agricultural news, a new U.S. Government Accountability Office report says that federal lawmakers should sound the death knell on the 45-cent blender's tax credit that has been credited for helping the ethanol industry expand in recent years. Renewable Fuels Association Communications Director Matt Hartwig says he doubts that federal lawmakers will take the GAO report seriously. The GAO report says that the tax may no longer be needed to stimulate conventional corn ethanol production because the domestic industry has matured, its processing is well understood, and its capacity is already near the effective renewable fuels standard limit of 15 billion gallons per year for conventional ethanol. Industry trade groups say that the United States should press ahead with its World Trade Organization complaint against a 12-year European Union ban on imports of U.S. poultry. In a letter to the U.S. Trade Representative, the National Chicken Council, U.S. Poultry and Egg Export Council, National Turkey Federation, and the National Association of Manufacturers say now it is, quote, most appropriate to take the issue to the next step in the WTO dispute settlement panel process, namely requesting that the issue be addressed by a World Trade Organization dispute settlement panel. Rabobank Agri-Commodity Markets research says that ethanol plants that were mothballed are coming back online and others are expanding capacity, indicating more corn will be used for ethanol. Rabobank said if U.S. ethanol production stays at its current 11.5 billion gallons, corn usage for ethanol will increase from about 3.7 bushels in 2008-2009 to around 4.3 billion bushels in 2009-2010. China and a top G77 official accused rich nations today of trying to kill off the Kyoto Protocol, the UN's main weapon in the fight against global warming. The United Nations hopes a major climate meeting in Copenhagen in December will lead to a broader framework to expand or replace Kyoto, whose first phase ends in 2012. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week. You can find both of them and other agricultural programming anytime you'd like to listen to on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can easily subscribe and unsubscribe as well to our weekend newsletter, or just have these two programs and other ag programming delivered to you as a podcast. You can get them just about any way you'd like at willag.org. And don't forget about what we call our mobile analyst portal. The number there is 217-333-3434. It's just a phone call, and you can listen to a bit of analysis from the opening market report and the closing market report, and, of course, the numbers. That's at 217-333-3434. Again, the address is willag.org. Now, up next, you know, farmers wondering what to do about new crop corn sales have two options, well, at least two timing options. I'll have more with Daryl Good. The nearby cash corn bids were pretty good at the time this story was written, on the first day of October. And very much like the soybean market, the quick ship premiums were a worthwhile thing for farmers to do. That is, says University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good, if a farmer had corn to harvest or in the bin yet to move, it would be worthwhile to take advantage of the near-term price premiums.
Well, a little bit like soybeans. Right now, we are seeing a little bit of a premium if you can deliver corn right now. So if you're in that position that you've got some early harvested corn, market's probably saying go ahead and sell that. You can get a premium over what it's going to be in 3 weeks from now. But for later harvested corn, there still is a bit of a carry in the market, suggesting that we should be looking at storing this crop. Do we store it priced or unpriced? I think is the big question. I mean, you can lock in a bit of a return to storage if you forward contract it for later delivery. I think for the most part, I think farmers are going to store this crop unpriced, thinking that there is potential as we get into some economic recovery as we move through the year, that we could see some rebound in cash corn prices.
The farmer is likely to store corn, but is that the right thing to do?
I think it's always a case, how many eggs do you put in each basket? We never really suggest that we do the same thing with 100% of the crop. A lot will obviously depend on how much of the crop has been forward priced. The more that's been forward priced, I think the more risk you can take on the unpriced portion. If you've sold none of the new crop, then you say, well, you know, do I want to store 100% of the crop and risk a price level on 100%? Maybe not. And so we say get some of it sold, particularly if it's harvested early. But I think right now the majority of the crop probably should be stored.
Stored on farm or at the elevator and priced at a later date. This is because the commodity futures indicate the price of corn will be higher in the coming months. And not only that, it also is because the indication suggests the difference between pricing corn today and in the future will cover the cost of the storage and the interest on carrying the crop. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Monday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. The folks at the Andersons join us today to take a look at that place. On the line with us, Greg Johnson. Good afternoon to you, Greg.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Been busy at all?
Well, not today. We were busy over the weekend with some reduced drying charges on corn, and we took in a lot of corn over the weekend, and that special went off this morning, and surprisingly, the truck traffic slowed down this morning as well. So.
Or maybe not so surprising.
Yeah. And the beans, people want to start on beans, but they're still just a little wet. I think we, you know, with the sun out now and the wind blowing a little bit, maybe we'll start to see beans come in this afternoon. And hopefully, just hopefully, we can miss that rain that they've got in the forecast tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll come in this afternoon, but I would think for not very long, probably, right?
Correct. Correct. The beans look like they're ready. I mean, over the next, you know, 5 or 6 days, there could be a lot of beans ready, but the weather just doesn't seem like it wants to cooperate and give us more than a day at a time to get those beans out.
Yeah, on the quick ship for the drying, you expect, was that to meet a need that you had? Why was that put in place?
Yes, almost every elevator, there were some extremely good premiums out there. Normally by October, there's corn being harvested, and this year with the lateness of the crop, trains are starting to show up at elevators. You know, they can be placed any time in the first half of October. Well, people need corn, so those first half October trains, when you don't want them, or when you do want them to show up, they don't show up till the 15th. Now they're showing up on the 1st. So I think a lot of elevators had to offer some half-price drying because that's the only way farmers are going to take 28 to 30% moisture corn out of the field.
Yeah, and did they still get docked in that process pretty heavily?
Well, there is a discount. I mean, it's 2 cents a point drying, but normally it's 3.5 or 4 cents a point, so
right.
they are saving themselves some money that way, and some guys just feel like they need to get it going, and if it stays wet for a very long time, then they're glad that they got a little bit done anyway.
Yeah, basis still staying strong?
Basis is extremely strong.
Yeah.
Until we see the weather cooperate, basis levels are going to stay strong.
No, weather cooperation could be a ways away. What are your bids?
334 on old corn. That's the quick shipment bid. All fall 323 and Jan 339. Beans, quick shipment, 885, all fall, 880, and January, 886.
Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He's with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon, back in just 2 minutes when we'll explore the agricultural weather forecast with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. They're in the Boeing building in Chicago.
It's National Ice Cream Sandwich Day. The ice cream treat was likely invented in the summer of 1900 on the Lower East Side of New York City. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the first U.S. national income tax was passed to aid the Union War effort. In 1866, the first patent for a tin can with a key opener was issued in the U.S. In 1887, numerous websites give credit to Rowell Hodge for the patent of barbed wire. But history shows that Joseph Glidden is the father of modern barbed wire. The DeKalb, Illinois native attended a country fair where he witnessed a demonstration of a wooden rail with sharp nails protruding along its sides. It inspired Glidden to fashion barbs on an improvised coffee bean grinder, placing them on a smooth wire and then twisting another wire around the first to hold it in place. And in 1966, Richard Shoup died, an American pathologist. He was the first to identify an influenza virus and first to vaccinate animals against influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is a Monday afternoon. On the line with us, Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Oh, hi, atop the Boeing building. Well, at least halfway up that building there this afternoon. Hi, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fine, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I would be better if you could give me sunshine and 75 for the whole week. Is that possible?
Well, enjoy your mid-60s today, Todd, because that's about as good as it's going to get here as we go through this week.
How ugly is it going to be?
Well, in our opinion, pretty ugly here as we go through the week. We have one system which is right now in the midst of crossing the plains. That will bring another round of rain to the Midwest as we go through tonight into tomorrow. That will be followed by a shot of unseasonably cool temperatures. Then that will be then followed by yet another rain-producing system and another round of even colder temperatures as we go into the upcoming weekend, Todd. So today's basically as good as it's going to be. And this cold and unseasonably wet and cold pattern here looks to be firmly in place, well, you know, starting tomorrow, and then that looks to be in place all through next week.
And I saw a note from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, that Sunday morning and early next week would be really frosty. Are we going to end the growing season?
It certainly appears that we're going to be ending the growing season, especially across the northern two-thirds of the Midwest. Yeah, we see temperatures dropping below freezing with numerous 20-degree readings here expected for Sunday and on into Monday morning, you know, basically about a week from now.
Northern two-thirds, can you give me a division line somewhere, or kind of roughly speaking?
Well, roughly in a line here from around Indianapolis on over to Champaign-Urbana, then kind of down southwest towards St. Louis and west thereafter towards Kansas City. So it's a healthy chunk here in the Midwest.
Yeah, the bulk of the corn crop probably will be in all of that area, I would think.
That is true. So for any late maturing crops, which there is a small percentage out there, it looks like that's going to end the season here.
All right. And then what do you see around the rest of the globe that's of urgent matters?
Well, actually, an area that's not very urgent right now is South America. Mm-hmm. There's no major issues. And then we have some dryness in parts of Europe, especially Eastern Europe, in Ukraine. That needs to be watched. Also, southeastern China and their winter wheat, winter rapeseed areas also are seeing some drying trends here of late. But overall, nothing really critical at this stage of the season.
Anything else you wanted to make sure we talked about this afternoon?
That's about it, Todd. Pretty quiet out there, except for our junky weather here in the Midwest coming up.
Well, we'll call again next week and see if that junky weather gets any better. How about
that? We'll tell you when it's going to end.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Todd.
We'll talk to you next April in that case, right? Yeah. All right, we'll see you. Thanks, Mark.
All right, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.